Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Gittin is Ayin Zion, 77. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf as long as Zechon Ishmael Lipa Gabriela Bashmuel. We begin today in the Mishnah 9, Vav Amud Beis. One more Mishnah and Sugya to do to finish up the 7th parak of the Masechta. We start today the 8th parak. 8th parak is a very popular Masechta in the yeshiva world. As we begin the 8th parak, you'll understand why. A lot of basic concepts, a lot of place for analysis and chakira. Okay, but that's the 8th parak. We're not there yet. Let's start the last sugya, the last mission, last sugya in the 7th parak. We start with the Mishnah. Harizikitech im lo bat mikan vad yud beis chodesh. The man makes a tanai because that's what we've been doing in these mishnayos in the 7th parak. We've been talking about tanai. We're talking about conditions, and so the stipulation in the Mishnah is a very simple one. He says that if I don't come back within the next 12 months, the get would be an effective get. So umeis besochid beis chodesh, but he dies within the next 12 months. So there is the Mishnah says no get. Under these circumstances, the get is not a get because he didn't. In other words, the idea is that the get was only going to be a successful get or a valid get only after the 12 months are up, and by the time 12 months are up, he's no longer there. And we have the basic principle that we've said already a number of times in our parak, in our very parak, gavein get lachemisa. So therefore, the get's not going to be a valid get. The imlo basi is not as clear cut as for example amanas. Amanas is although even that's not so clear cut. But the Rebbe's psak is, and we're going to see it again today, is that the amanas means me'achshav. Okay.
He didn't come back.
Huh?
He says, get if I don't come back.
Right.
He didn't.
Correct. But the effectiveness.
He's dead means he didn't come back.
Correct, right. But the effectiveness doesn't take place until a year from now. And he's dead. So it doesn't work. So now the contrasting case is now going to be very simple. Meaning now in this contrasting case, he says the get's going to be effective immediately if in the event that I don't come back. So if I don't come back, it's just a tonight, it's just a condition. As long as I don't come back within 12 months, so then the get's going to be effective get. Effective when? Effective from the time that he delivered it. So since it's a get while given while he was alive, so therefore the get's going to be a valid get.
Okay.
After
12 months.
Wait. That's a good question. We're gonna hold on 1 second. We're gonna come to that. Im lo bati mikan va'yud bechodesh. Kitzu tenula get liishti. So let's say the stipulation goes like this. This is now the third scenario in the Mishnah. He says, look, if I don't come back within 12 months, I want you, and it sounds like from the way he's stipulating, I want you to write and deliver the get, but only after 12 months are up. So let me read that again. So imlo bati mikan v'yud beis chodesh kisvu utenu get liishti. So kisvu get besochid beis chodesh v'nasal lachir yud beis chodesh and again. So now let's say the get was written within the 12 months and then delivered after the 12 months. The get's not going to be a valid get because the author of our Mishnah, let's call him the Tanakama. The Tanakama of our Mishnah is of the opinion that the stipulation seems to be pretty clear. He wanted the get to be written and only written after 12 months are up. And once the get was written within 12 months, that is going to be that will be a failure of his condition. His condition was very clear. His stipulation was very clear, and so therefore the get's not going to be a valid get. Kisvu tnu get liishti im lo bas mikan vayud beis chodesh. So here in this now fourth scenario of the Mishnah, it's almost identical to the third scenario, but here we're going to flip. He says kisvu tnu get liishti. He says, I want you to write and deliver, get to my wife, if I don't come back within 12 months. So now in this scenario, we have where it's certainly the condition is if I don't come back within the 12 months, but it's not perfectly clear whether or not the writing and the writing can take place within the 12 months. He only mentioned 12 months after he mentioned the instruction of writing. So, according to the Tanakhama, this also is not going to be good. Because the Tanakhama understands this to mean that he wants the writing to take place after 12 months. Even though this is not as clear as the previous scenario, in the previous scenario, he clearly wanted the writing to be done only after 12 months, but according to the Tanakhama of this fourth scenario, it's the same halacha. It's the same basic din, even though he said kisvu before he said 12 months.
But it said within 12 months.
The understanding is, if I don't come back within the next 12 months, so then I want you to write and deliver the get. Very similar to the previous scenario. It's just over here, it's not as clear-cut as the previous scenario. In the previous scenario, we clearly wanted the get to be written only after 12 months are over. Okay. Rabbi Yossi or Mekazeget. Now, Rabbi Yossi disagrees on this latter case, on this, what we would call now the fourth scenario. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. He says that this get would be a valid get, because again, what Rabbi Yossi, well, let's say the simple pshat in the Mishnah. The Gemara later on will suggest another pshat, but the simple pshat in the Mishnah over here is that in this fourth scenario, the husband had no hakpada. He wasn't particular about the fact that the get has to be written after 12 months. He just wanted the get to be delivered after 12 months. In terms of the writing of the get, the get could be written at any point in time. Okay. Kis v'lach yud beit chosh, v'nas v'lach yud beit chodesh, umeis. So, let's say he instructed the get to be written after 12 months, and to be given after 12 months, and then at some point in time he died, and we don't know how to coordinate the writing of the get and his death. So, ima get kon lamisa arez the get. So now, if we can coordinate, and we know a timeline, and we know that his get occurred before the delivery of the get, so that's fine. That would be a good get. The misa kodmala get, but however, if his death predated the delivery of the get, that's no good. Ain't no get, because ain't gelach misa. The im ain yadua. Now, let's say we just simply don't know, meaning we simply don't have a good timeline of when the get was written and delivered versus when he died. We just don't know. So, So the Mishnah over here uses a language, employs the lashon that we said earlier of it's we're in limbo. We're in a halachic limbo. We learned earlier the statement to Rabbi Zera. The Gemara's not going to repeat it again right now, but the statement to Rabbi Zera that whenever you have this line of Megreshet Ve'en Megreshet, so then there's a requirement on the part of the husband to still support his wife, or the estate has to support the wife, because we simply do not know. Okay, Tano. Rabbi Seni Tirul Inase. Okay. The rabbi's permitted. Now, what do we learn in the Mishnah? We learn in the Mishnah that it's not good in the first scenario. What was the first scenario? Look back at the Mishnah, and let's just quickly review the first scenario of the Mishnah. First scenario of the Mishnah is, Harezi Kitechem Lo Bat Mikan Vad Yud Beis Chodesh. This is a get if I don't come back within 12 months. And he dies within the first 12 months. Umeis Betzuch Yud Beis Chodesh Yed Get. So the Mishnah said that's not a get. We think, no, we don't think, I was going to say we know, but the pshat behind the Mishnah is that the effectiveness of the get is only going to be after 12 months. And by that point in time, he's dead, and he didn't get lachar misa. That's the presentation, the first case of the Mishnah, that's very straightforward. The Braisa taught us, Braisa teaches us, that not everyone agrees with that first, the conclusion, the first scenario. Meaning, there's a group of chachamim who permitted her to remarry based on the get. The get is going to be valid. Why should that be? So it is the famous, now I don't, when I say famous, I mean, we saw this earlier in the Masechta, but it's the famous group of Chachamim who permitted oil that was produced and manufactured by Goyim. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us that the Chachamim made a number of gzeras, Yain Akum, Bishal Akum, Pasakum, okay, a number of gzeiros that were made by the Chachamim in order to basically create more separation between us and them, so there'd be less chasnus, less intermarriage. So the one of the gzeiros that they made was oil. Oil that was produced and manufactured by a non-Jew would also fall under the gzeira. This was a onerous gzera that was made by the Chachamim. They themselves realized it. And so therefore, a Beis Din, specifically the Beis Din of the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, we'll see this in just a moment. So they were the ones who lifted the ban. They saw that there was a Yifshay Elatzibur La'amod Ba. It was just too onerous. And so therefore, they lifted the ban. Gemara says, this Beis Din that we just described, they're the ones responsible for the, they're the ones who disagree with our Mishnah. Why? Why do they disagree with our Mishnah? Sarva laka Rav Yossi. Gemara goes on to explain. Because they subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Yossi, Damar Zmano Shoshtar Mochia Chalav. And they are of the opinion, Zmano Shoshtar. Meaning, look at the date of the document. When is the get delivered, meaning not the actual delivery, but when does it get valid? It's valid based on the date. The date is basically another way of saying, I'm not only writing it today, it should be effective today, effective to this date. Even if there's a condition in the document itself, the condition just simply means it's a condition, that's all it is. So in the first case of the Mishnah, if I don't come back in 12 months, this get should be a get. The gate, is a date on it? Yes. According to Rav Yossi, that means that the date is telling us that it's going to be effective as of the date that's written on the get. Zmano Shoshtar Mochia Chalav. Once we have that, The not coming back within 12 months is just a condition. If he dies within the 12 months, so then he satisfied the condition, meaning he's not coming back. I know we have something called Tchias Amesim, but for the foreseeable future, he's not coming back. So Amar Rabbi Abba Bered Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah Beno Shel Rabbi Gamli Abar Rabbi Hora Velo Hodu Lo Kol Siyato VeAmar Le Kol Shato. So for the Gemara here just identifies what basin we're talking about. As I already pointed out, it was the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. It was Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah. Namesake, he was named after his grandfather, who was the son of Rabbi Gamliel, who was the son of Rebbe, meaning it was the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And the Gemara pointed out that his position was controversial. Lo, they didn't agree with him. The Gemara has two versions: Kol Siato, meaning that his chevra didn't agree with him, or the other version is Kol Shato, while he was alive, meaning it was a position that he took, which was while he was alive, a position that was not adopted. Sounds like from the Gemara that subsequent to his death, it was adopted. It was an adopted position. Amalei Rav Elazar la Usaba ki sheruse la alter sheruse o la achar 12 chodesh sheruse. So now the Gemara asked the question. You know, you asked this just a moment ago. So look, we know that when he dies, according to Rav Yossi, who disagrees with our Mishnah, so we know that when he dies, it gets going to be a valid get, because again, the document is dated and it'll be effective going back to the time of the date. So it's going to be a good get. We also know because he's dead, he's not coming back. So, the question we're going to ask is a really simple one. Do we have to wait till the end of the 12 months? Because nothing's, again, barring Tchias HaMesim, nothing's going to change between his death and now whatever time is left until the 12 months are up. He's not going to come back within 12 months. So now, it's a simple question, it's a good question. We are going to allow her to remarry based on this get. But can she remarry immediately upon the death of the husband, or do we have to wait until the 12 months are over? So the Gemara goes over this question. On one hand, the Gemara says he's not coming back. So the Gemara says, on the other hand, we also have a Tanai. There was a condition, and the condition is if I don't come back within 12 months. And even though we know what's going to happen, we know the outcome, we know the result, but still, there's a Tanai, and there maybe has to be a formal Kiyum HaTanai. The Gemara says. Now, the truth of the matter is, it's a great question. You didn't need to get to Rabbi Yossi to ask this question. I mean, you could have just stayed on our Mishnah and asked the very same question in the Mishnah. In fact, you did just a moment ago. The Gemara says, So in our Mishnah, there was a case where we can all agree it's going to be a good get if he says the word me'achshav. So he's saying the get should be effective immediately, again, on the condition that I don't come back within 12 months. And he dies within the 12 months, and now we're going to ask the exact same question. The only thing that's bothering the Gemara right now is, why did you wait till we introduced ourselves to Rabbi Yossi? You didn't need it. We could have just asked this question directly on the Mishnah. So, la'altahavi de'lo'asi o'dilma la'achiyud beis chodesh ha'i kindly tonight. And again, the Gemara just simply formulates the exact same question. Do we know, look, he's not coming back, he's dead, and therefore she can remarry immediately? Or no? Do we have the formal tonight, if I don't come back within 12 months, and you're just going to have to formally wait until the 12 months are up? So, enachinam, the Gemara concedes. Of course you're right. Of course this question could have been asked on the Mishnah, and you didn't need to get to Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara just simply says, the only reason why we asked by Rabbi Yossi is because there was an actual incident that subscribed to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yossi. Maisa Shahaya. It just happened to have been that there was a man who delivered a get to his wife, and he died within the 12 months, and they subscribed to Rav Yossi's viewpoint, and the question arose. Now that the husband's dead, do we have to wait until the 12 months are up, or can she remarry immediately? That's the only reason why we asked on Rav Yossi, because there was a Maaseh Shahaya. It was an actual episode.
Why can't we say that tonight goes by the wayside because it's an ones for this man? He's not going to come back in 12 months.
Tonight is no good. In other words, we know that he's not coming back. On the other hand, he said, if I don't come back within 12 months. So are we literalists on the tonight that he said? He literally said, if I don't come back within 12 months. So again, we know what's going to happen now when we get to the 12 months. He's not coming back. But still, there is a condition that was articulated, that was agreed upon. I mean, you don't need her agreement. But in other words, there was a condition that was articulated, and do we have to literally follow the condition?
That's this. She got married, so what?
Well, I mean, if she got married, if I wouldn't imagine that the Gemara would suggest the kids are mamzerim, but the get will, I mean, right, if she gets married and you subscribe to the viewpoint of being a literalist, I'm not clear. I'm not sure what the ramifications would be, but the Gemara says that's the general question of how literally do we have to follow the condition. Okay, let's say we have the following language that's employed. So let's say a man says to his wife at night, the previous night, this will be your get when the sun comes out. Tomorrow morning when the sun comes out. So the Gemara says, that's clear. So the Gemara says, well, he was giving a very specific time in which the get will be effective, and that will be when the sun comes out. And as Rashi points out, the top Rashi, and Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, take a look. So, and it goes without saying that if over the course of the night, unfortunately, he doesn't make it until the morning, the get's not going to be a valid get. So, so the difference says Rashi. Let's continue reading in Rashi. So Rashi says, "V'gam b'masis nami arizigitech leche shelo avolach Hashem asar chodesh lav gedhu v'leka lemitzmach azmanu shoshtar mochiach alav." Now Rashi says over here, what about zmanu shoshtar? Meaning, isn't there a date on the document? Deha behedja amar leche shelo avo yeheged avalo me'achshav. Right. In here, the instructions are very clear. I do not want the get to take effect until the sun comes up. So, okay, there may be a date on the document. Although the truth of the matter is, if the document was written at night, it's going to have the same date. But still, the point being is that even if it doesn't, because he says I only want the get to take effect when the sun rises, so the Gemara says, so then you're going to have to wait until the sun rises until the effectiveness of the get. V'chi ma'is balayla have a get lachemisa. Okay. So the Gemara says, now what if he uses the word amanas? What does the word amanas mean? So this is now, I believe, the third time in our perek. So we've gone over this. So amanas shetetze chama min artika me'achshav kamar la when you say the words amanas, we all are in agreement. We're not all in agreement.
Yeah.
The halacha is, the Gemara says, the Gemara quotes Rav Huna in the name of Rebbe, the halacha is that amanas is considered me'achshav. So you want the get to be effective immediately, just the condition is that until the sun rises. But that's just a condition. The effectiveness of the get takes place immediately. We'll see. Here becomes the ambiguity. The ambiguity exists in the statement of im. Now, im is a word that really can have multiple connotations. Im teitzei, mar tzavala karev, yosi dar mazmano shoshar mochiach alav, so v'hav alei ke mehayom im meisi, ke me'achshav im meisi. So some take the word im to mean much like what we described when we say, like Rabbi Yossi, zmano shoshar mochiach alav, meaning it means effective immediately. And the im is just simply a condition where we're gonna wait until the following happens. But the effectiveness will be effective immediately once the events unfold, meaning retroactive. Mar lo sefer kerev Yosef ahavalei ke'im meisi greira. So the counterposition to that would be that we don't subscribe to Rav Yossi, which means that the effectiveness of the get is only going to be when I die. But that's too late because they didn't get lachemisa. So the Gemara says that your two extreme positions are lichishetetze. So the Gemara says that's clear, that's unambiguous. You want the get to be effective only when the event happens, meaning when the sun rises. There is the amanas, which is effective immediately, but we're going to wait until the following occurs. And then the ambiguity, which we saw back in the Mishnah, which the Gemara now is presenting, is if you use the word im. Kisvu utnu get.
You know the sun is going to come out.
Yeah.
But here in the Mishnah, he's dead. He's not going to come
out. Okay.
There's a big difference.
Okay. Kisvu tenu get liishtim lo batim mikan v'ad yud v'chosh kisvu v'chule. As I mentioned when we learned the Mishnah together, there is four different scenarios in the Mishnah. We're focusing right now on scenario three, number four. Now, in scenario number three, take a look back at the Mishnah. We're going back to the beginning of the shiur today. If you take a look at the back of the Mishnah, scenario number three, he said, Okay. So in scenario number three of the Mishnah, he says, if I don't come back within 12 months, I want you then and only then to write and deliver the get to my wife. In scenario number three, there was no machlokas between the Tanakam and Rav Yossi. Scenario number three, if they wrote the get within 12 months, it's no good. Even if they delivered it after 12 months. The Mishnah goes on to say, that's not going to be a get. That's scenario number three in the Mishnah. And look at the next scenario in the Mishnah. Kisvu utenu get liishti. So here, the instructions to write were just simply write it, and then if I don't come back within 12 months. Now, did he mean over there that he specifically wants it to be written after 12 months? The Tanakhama says that's correct. He only wants it to be written after 12 months. The Mishnah goes on to say, so in this scenario, the Tanakhama says it's really the same as the previous scenario. You cannot write the get within 12 months. That wasn't his interest. That wasn't his intent. His intent was only have get the get written after 12 months. Even though in this scenario, it's not as clear cut as the previous scenario. And on this case, Rav Yossi disagrees. Rav Yossi in the Mishnah said, "Omer kazeh get. This is a get." The fact that it was written within 12 months is not going to be a deal breaker, because that wasn't part of the deal. The only part of the deal was, I want you to give it after, if I don't come back after 12 months. But the writing of the get can take place before. Here's essentially the question the Gemara is asking. Is Rav Yossi arguing on scenario number four, but he's not arguing on scenario number three, or is Rav Yossi also arguing on scenario number three as well? And what the Gemara now is proposing is, Rav Yossi argues on both cases. And let's see this inside the Gemara. So, Amale Rav Yemele Rav Ashi Lemekas of Rav Yossi Ksav Get Al Tanai Kasher. If you write a get, now it says Al Tanai. Let's translate the words Al Tanai over here, meaning against the condition. Meaning, it's no big deal that they wrote a get within the 12 months. Even if he expressly articulated, I want you to write it after 12 months. But when he said, I want you to do it after 12 months, he didn't really mean the writing. And even if he said writing, he didn't really mean the writing. He just simply meant, don't deliver it until after 12 months. That's really what he meant. And the fact that he included writing is not a terribly big deal. And this is what the Gemara is proposing. And that according to Rav Yossi, in scenario number four and in scenario number three, Rav Yossi would say, if you write it within 12 months, it would be fine. Because even though he said, I want you to write it after 12 months, he really meant, I want you to deliver it after 12 months. But there's no big deal in writing within 12 months. The Gemara says, lo. Lo olam eim lecha pasal. So the Gemara says, I don't agree. I don't think that's correct. The correct Pshat Rav Yossi. And parenthetically, by the way, if this were the correct Pshat Rav Yossi, it would have been much better for the Mishnah to have attached Rav Yossi to scenario number three than to scenario number four. Scenario number three would have been a much bigger chiddush for Rav Yossi to say, that's fine. Why wait until scenario number four where it's less of a chiddush? Okay, but and that may be a fair point, but put that aside for a moment. The Gemara says that's not the right pshat. Eim lecha pasal. Really, the truth of the matter is that the husband said, don't write until after 12 months. Even Rav Yossi would agree, you cannot write it within 12 months. V'shani hacha medahavale lameimer, im labati kisva v'tenu. V'amar kisva v'tenu, im labati. So the Gemara says, and the significant difference between scenario number three and scenario number four is the flip. Because in scenario number three, he says, if I don't come back within 12 months, then and only then, you write and deliver. In scenario number four, he says, write and deliver, if I don't come back within 12 months. So clearly, scenario number four, according to Rav Yossi, he wasn't being makbid on when you could write it. Hachi kamer. Kitzu me'achshav. Utinuim labati. Utinuim labati. The way Rav Yosi understands the husband's instructions is you could write it now and you could deliver it if I don't come back within 12 months. And the Chachamim are going to argue, no, it doesn't matter whether the instructions were before the Imlabasi or if the Imlabasi was before the instructions. In either case, he didn't want anything to happen until after 12 months are over. Okay. Tan Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. La'achar Shavua Shana. Let's, what the Gemara is going over here is the following. Let's say his instructions were, I want you to write it after the Shemitah year. Okay, he's gone away for a long time, a very long time. Okay, and he says, and the instructions are, if I don't come back, le'acher shavua, after the Shemitah cycle, after the sabbatical cycle, then and only then I want you to write it. Here's the point that the Gemara is going to make now until the end of the parak. We know le'acher means after. How much further after? And essentially the idea that's going to come up almost to the end of this discussion is going to be, well, it's going to be after the unit of measurement. Now, so let's say, for example. Shemitah is counted by years. 7 years. When he says Achar Shavua, he means after one unit after the Shemitah cycle. So it's 1 year after Shemitah comes and goes, then and only then can you write it if he says Achar Shavua. Let's go to the next scenario. Achar Shana, after a year. How do we count years? What's the unit of measurement for counting year? Months. So when he says Achar Shavua, Chodesh. So then, you're going to have to wait till the year is over, and in order to satisfy his condition of la'acher, you're going to have to wait 1 month after that as well. La'acher chodesh, Shabbos. Now this one caught me by surprise. I would have guessed wrong if I didn't have the Gemara, because I would say that the unit of measurement for a month is days. But the Gemara says no. If he says chodesh, so the unit of measurement is weeks. Again, I took me by surprise. La'acher chodesh Shabbos, and so therefore, so that means then that if he stipulates that you write it and deliver it after the month is over, you're gonna have to wait a month plus one more week. La'acher Shabbos Mai. Now, what if he says after Shabbos, right? What does that mean? So again, the unit of measurement for a week is a day. Interesting, the Gemara is going to say something which actually will have very practical halachic ramifications. Yasir Rav Zeri Kamed Rav Asi V'Amilei V'Amri La Rav Asi Kamed Rav Yochanan. Okay, different versions of who sat in front of whom, but V'Kamer Chad B'Shaba Utrei Utlasa Basar Shabasa. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, that is considered still post Shabbos. Okay, we're still within, so it's Sunday morning right now, we're still within the aura of Shabbos. Arba v'chamisha umale shabasa, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, however, kame shabasa. That's more connected to the upcoming Shabbos. So therefore, what the Gemara is essentially answering is that if the husband's instruction is la'achar Shabbos, after the Shabbos, so Sunday, Monday, Tuesday are still within the glow of Shabbos. So you're going to have to wait till Wednesday. Everyone knows, I'd say this is a popular halacha, so to say, but everyone's familiar with the fact that if you missed Havdalah, Mosei Shabbos, so you can make up Havdalah. How long can you make up Havdalah? This is the Gemara. Meaning this Gemara right over here speaks to the idea that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday are still part of the previous Shabbos. So you missed Havdalah, Mosei Shabbos, you still have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, make it up.
They're called after Shabbos. So if you have to wait till after Shabbos, this is after Shabbos.
Right. But again,
period would be the second Shabbos.
Right, but following understood. But following the pattern of the Gemara, when he said La'acher, he meant not only wait till after Shabbos, but some unit of time after that as well. Meaning a year after the Shemitah cycle, a month after a year. So
just remain in time.
Yeah, okay. That's okay. Tanya Rabbi,
before Shabbos, he's good.
Could be. Tanya Rabbi Omer La'achar Regel Shloshim Yom. Now what if his instructions were deliver the get, write and deliver the get after Yontif. Okay, so this one's a tricky one because there is no unit of measurement for Yontif. Yontif comes in from Sukkot to Pesach, so that's a 6 month in this case, in this year, a seven month break. But then you go from Pesach to Shavuos, and you go from Shavuos to Sukkot, so it's not a standard singular unit of time in terms of measuring. So what exactly is meant when he says after Yontif? What is that unit of measurement post Yontif? How long are you in that Yontif aura? So Tanya, Rebbe Omer Lachar Regel Shoshim Yom. So Rebbe says Achar HaRegel means 30 days after Yontif.
What about
Tishrei? I guess the idea here is that we know that before Yontif you have to be in preparation before Yontif. 30 days before Yontif, right? Shoshim Yom Kom Lachag. So you have to be Dorish. You have to start expounding on the halachas of every Yontif that you're about to approach. So I'm guessing. The Gemara doesn't say this. This is just me, and I could be right, and probably not. But in other words, maybe over here, this is reflective in the other direction. That in the post-Yontif, it's 30 days, so to say. Nafag Rebbe Zera, Darsha Mishmei de Rebbe V'Kalsua. Now Rebbe Zera gets up there, and he starts darshing to the people in terms of what the halacha would be. So funny, he's darshaning like as if this were like a common occurrence. People are going to give instructions. You're going to write again, and you're going to say Lach Yontif, and what does that mean? Okay, but all right, still Torah in terms of what the halacha would be. So Darsh Mishmei the Rebbe V'Kalsua. So when he said in the name of Rebbe, so everyone said that's wonderful, that's great. As you'll see in just a moment, it's not because they liked the halacha, it's because they disagreed with the halacha. I know that sounds strange, but follow me. Mishmei de Rabbi v'lo kalsua. However, when he said the halacha and he said it, he didn't attribute it to Rebbe, but he said this is the popular slash a majority position, so they didn't praise him because they disagreed. In other words, they didn't think that this was in fact the halacha. So when you said a b'shem yachid, b'das yachid, and I know we're talking about Rav Yehuda Anasi, but still, if you're saying it as a das yachid, they're like, okay, that's interesting. But when you're saying it as halacha, they're like looking at him like, no, that's not halacha. It's not. So, amalei sachasa kavase. The Gemara ends off kind of awkwardly. The Gemara says, and by the way, that's not the halacha. And I say awkward because the Gemara doesn't give an option. Meaning, 30 days after Yontif is not la'achar Yontif. That doesn't define la'achar Yontif. What does define la'achar Yontif? Okay, so, it could be. The Gemara doesn't. I'm just telling you, the Gemara doesn't say. So I was about to say I'll take suggestions, but the Gemara itself doesn't say. Hajlach Misha Achzu. That is the end of the seventh parak. Let's begin. The eighth parak, as I mentioned at the beginning of this year today, is a very popular parak in the yeshiva. A lot of basic concepts that come up. A lot of opportunity for lamdus. Let's begin. Hazor get liishto. So a man throws a get to his wife. Okay, so the conclusion of this marriage and the divorce that's coming about is going with a simple toss. Now, the pasuk is very clear. The Torah says that when a man divorces his wife, so the Torah says v'nasam biyada, you have to take the get and you have to put it in her hand. If you were a literalist of the Torah, which we're not. We have Torah Shabbat Peh, which we're about to learn in just a moment. But if you're a literalist of the Torah, the only way that a get would be effective is if you take the get and you put it directly in her hand. And that, and only that, is the way to divorce her. As we're going to see, as we're now learning Torah Shabbat Peh, that's not the only way to divorce her. The other way to divorce her is to make a kinyan and put it in her rishus. As long as it goes in her rishus, that will be a satisfactory way of fulfilling the pasuk of v'nasam biyada. And that's exactly what the Mishnah is teaching us. Hazara get lishto, v'hi besoch beisa, besoch chatzera, harezeh megureshes. If a man throws a get to his wife, and she is in the chatzer, let me do it in the correct order. She's in the house, she's in the chatzer, so the gerushin would be a good gerushin. Zarkala besoch beisa, besoch chatzera, afilo hi ima, afilo hu ima, b'mita, enu megureshes. But let's say he throws it into his house or into his chatzer. That's not a good gerushin. And even if she's there, doesn't matter. It's not a good gerushin because there was no transfer of possession from him to her. The get was not given to her, nor was it given to her property. If it was put in her lap, if it was put in her basket, the gerushin would be a good gerushin. This last line of the Mishnah, we're not going to be discussing today. Later in this parak, we're going to be discussing that last line of the Mishnah. First thing we're going to establish right now is the following. As I mentioned, when we started the Mishnah, the Torah is very clear. The Torah says, "V'nasim bi'adah." You have to put the get in her hand. And meanwhile, the Mishnah just started off with as if it was obvious. Doesn't have to physically go into her hand. As long as it goes into her property, that would be sufficient. Minahani mili, which only generates a simple question of the Gemara. Where does this come from? How is this deduced from the Torah? So the Tanur Rabban, the Gemara quotes the price of anasim biyada, ainli ela yada. The Torah says that you put it in her hand, and ainli ela yada. Now, at that point, at this point, we only have her hand. Gaga, chaser, karfifa, minayin. How do I know that it can go into her rooftop, her courtyard, her backyard? So all different, all various versions of her property. So tamalavim vinasan mikamakom. So the word vinasan means as long as he puts it in somewhere in her property, so then that would work. How exactly this drusha works is not perfectly clear, to be honest. The Gemara just simply says we have the pasuk of vinasan, and that teaches us. How does that teach us that you don't have to actually put in her hand? So the Gemara doesn't say. In fact, Tosus is so bothered. Tosus says, you know, what it sounds like over here is you have what's called a klal and a prat. The general of, you place it. The specific in her hand. Right. How does klal and prat generally work? Ein b'klal, shema b'prat. Right. When you have a klal and prat, so the way it works normally is that the klal tells us that it can only go into that which was identified. Tosus makes a suggestion over here. I mean, it's more than a suggestion. I mean, it's really, I mean, there are other ways to learn the Gemara, but if you take a look at the top Tosos on the first Tosos in the Perek, v'im tamar v'neima v'nasan klal b'yada prad v'im b'klal amasha b'prad. So why don't we just simply understand this as a regular klal of prad? Tosos says v'yesh lomer v'shilcha. So v'shilcha is now going to be back to a generality, and so that gives us chaz of a klal v'danin keina prad. Okay, so this is Tosos says, even though again it doesn't say in the Gemara, but this will have to fall under the category of klal, uprat, uklal. And so therefore, and we know that once we have that formula, so that now expands it to anything which is ke'en haprat. The ke'en haprat is her hand, and anything similar to her hand, meaning her property, her rishus.
Can't you just assume it's a kenyan? So why can't you, instead of all these rushes, it's a kenyan?
Yeah, but the Torah also says viyada. Okay. So Vitanya Nami Hachi, the Gemara quotes the Braisa as well. Braisa says, Gabi Ganav. Same exact point regarding a Ganav. Okay, we're not comparing a woman getting divorced and a Ganav, but the point is as follows. We know that a Ganav, if he steals something, so first of all, he has a mitzvah to return the item that which he stole. That's the mitzvah of a Heshev as a Gzela. We also know that if he doesn't return the item which he stole, and he was caught with the item that he stole. So obviously, if he's caught with the item he stole, number one, we're going to take it away from him. It doesn't belong to you. And number two, he's going to get fined. What's the fine for the ganav? It's called kefa. He's going to have to pay now, not only full restitution of that which he stole. If he has the item goes back. If not, he'll make full restitution of its monetary value. But plus, he's going to also have to add a second time the value of the item. It's called kefa. So, but this is only if he was caught with the item. On his own, if he comes back and he says, "Here I am. Here's a stolen item," so he's not going to be he's not going to pay kefal. So he has to be caught. I'm going to use the term over here, slight pun, but almost intentional. He has to be called red-handed. Okay. And in other words, the item has to be in his hand. At least that's what the Torah says. And again, now we're going to go through the same procedure where, even if it was not caught in his hand, even if it was caught in his possession, his property, that would also be good as well. So, the Torah says if it was found on his properties whatsoever. Now, the same idea is expressed both by Gittin and by the Ganav, where even though the Torah uses the word Yad, the Yad over here is not to be understood super literally, but more expansively in both scenarios. The hand of a woman just simply means her possession. The hand of a ganav just simply means his possession. And the Gemara says, and I need both. Tzricha. De'iash meaning get, meaning essentially, before we go further, what essentially is bothering the Gemara right now is what we have a principle known as binyanav. Binyanav tells me that once a Torah tells me a precedent, So then, it's like law here in this country. Once you have precedent, so then you simply take another case, you compare it to this case, and it's precedented, so therefore the halacha should be true. Why over here can the Torah not just simply say in one of these places that yad is not to be understood super literally, it could be more expansively understood as just simply rishus, and once I have the Torah mentioned it once, so that's it, that creates a binyan av, and that creates a precedent for all other cases. Why does the Torah have to tell it to me both in the case of get and in the case of ganav? That's what the Gemara is doing right now. That's what the Gemara is arguing tzricha. The Gemara says, utzricha. Di'iyash meaning get mishum debal karcha migarsha. When it comes to get, so a woman's divorced against her will. And Rashi over here, beautiful Rashi. Rashi over here writes, mishum debal karcha, klamar. Di'chiya ivle nami biyada al karchehi. Even though the Torah is specific about putting it in her hand, but we also know that the woman does not need consent in order to get divorced. A woman could be divorced against her will. The afilo hachi amarechmana ditiskarish hilka chaserinami kanila. So since you don't need consent, the hand over there is not as significant as we would have imagined. Meaning, even though the Torah says the word hand, explains Rashi, but hand over here is just a figure of speech because you don't need her consent. So she doesn't need to hold the item and willfully take it. Just simply needs to put it in her hand. So since you don't need her consent, there really is no difference between her hand and any other of her properties. However, Avagana, back to the Gemara. But when it comes to a ganav, you can't force a stolen item into a ganav. A ganav, by definition, needs to physically and with intent steal the item from somebody else. So aim alone. So I might have thought that the only thing that qualifies him as a ganav vis-a-vis the kefal penalty is only going to be when he was caught literally red-handed. And the Gemara says, and we can argue the other direction as well. If the Torah only would have said it by the ganav, look, he's a ganav. The Torah is interested in punishing and penalizing him, and therefore, by the ganav, we could be more expansive in our definition of what a hand is. As long as the item is somewhere either in his hand or in his property, you're a ganav, you need to be penalized, so therefore, a kanas of kefal, even if it was not physically in your hand. Aval get, aim alone. But when it comes to a get, there's no avar yan over here. It's unfortunate that the marriage is not working out and they're getting a divorce. But there's no avaryan, there's no penalty over here. So maybe specifically it has to go into her hand. So therefore, tzricha. That's why they're both necessary. Okay, now, here's the next stage of the Gemara. Chatzera, Masha Kansi Isha Kanabala. Gemara says, let's understand what's going on right now. We just learned in our Mishnah that if he doesn't hand it to her, but he puts in her chatzer, sufficient. That's going to be considered a valid kinyan where now she's acquiring the get. The Gemara says, I don't understand. What property does she have? Now let's review what we learned together back in Ksuvos. When a woman gets married, so there are two types of nechasim that we could be talking about, of properties of hers that are going to go into the marriage, meaning she owned the property going into the marriage. Number one, nechsei tzon barzel. Nechsei tzon barzel basically is that she's relinquishing the property over to the husband. Now the husband will guarantee the property, the value of the property, meaning that the property will be assessed and appraised, and when they get married, they're going to write that appraised value in the ksuva, and he'll be totally on the hook to reimburse her at the conclusion of the marriage if he divorces her, he predeceases her, and that's what's called nechsei tzon barzel. But we're not talking about nechsei tzon barzel because that's clearly not hers, meaning that's his. Again, he's guaranteeing the value to her, but while they're married, that's clearly his. That's not even up for discussion. What is up for discussion is nechsei malug. Nechsei malug is property that she goes into a marriage and she retains it as her property. She doesn't write into the ksuva. In other words, it's hers. However, by nechsei malug, over the duration of the marriage, even though the property is hers, the karka, the title is hers, any of the peros that come off of that property over the course of the marriage belong to him. This is an institution, tanai ksuva. This is part of the contractual marital relationship that exists between husband and wife, that the husband is entitled, he's the owner of the produce that comes off the property. So, what the Gemara now is addressing is the following scenario. he really is a shareholder in her property. Now, I know this is not what we would classically refer to as being a shareholder. He doesn't have an actual interest in the property itself, but we've saw this in Ksuva time and again, and we're saying it now as well. The fact that he gets produce of the property, as far as halacha is concerned, we view him as a partner in the property. And so there, his kinyan peiros makes him as a partner in the property. And as such, the Gemara now is basically asking, so now, in order for the get to be hers, you're going to put it in her hand, or something which is her property? By putting it in her property while they're married, it's not her property exclusively. It's his and her property. He is a partner, so to say, in the property itself. This is what's bothering the Gemara. The Gemara says, let's see this inside. So the Gemara says, Chatir, Mashakan Sishakanabala. Amr of Allah, Bekosala Dinu Dvarim Inla bin Ichsech. So the Gemara starts off with the following proposal. All this should sound familiar. We did this in Ksuvos, we're doing it now again. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what he's doing is he's just simply withdrawing his share from the property. A withdrawal of the share. The Gemara says, V'chi kasev lahachi ma'haviv ha'atanyo amal ha'chaver dunad v'ayim ainli al sadazu v'ainli eitzik ba v'yidi misalekesem en alam ha'klum. The Gemara says, we learned this back in Ksuvos, we're saying it again right now, and that is, a simple withdrawal without transferring it to anybody is a halachically meaningless act. You don't just simply say, hey, you know what? I'm relinquishing my shares. You want to transfer to somebody, that's one thing. But you can't just simply remove yourself from it. You can't excuse yourself from those shares. So we're back to our question. If he puts the get in her chatzer, which is right now we're describing as nechse malug, how can that serve as a proper divorce when meanwhile it has to go into something which is exclusively hers? So the Gemara says, well, one way that we can construct the scenario would be that he relinquishes the shares before he becomes the owners of the share. The time that he acquires peiros is not at erusin, the first stage of marriage, but only after nisuin, like we've said time and again. The way the marriage works is in two stages: erusin, nisuin. At erusin, they're married, but with no financial obligation one to the other. At nisuin, they live together, husband and wife, and all the financial obligations kick in. So now, at erusin, he is not yet a shareholder of her property. Then he could say, at that point in time, when we enter into the marriage, so I'm going to bow out from my peiros. So he could block the peiros coming into him, into his rishos. And once he does that, then she will have a property that will be exclusively hers. So Gemara says, "Uchad Rav Kahana, the Amar Rav Kahana, Nachla Habala La Adam Imakom Acher Adam Asna Allah Shelo Yerushenu." So the Gemara says, if you have a property that is Ba'alaha Mimakom Acher, it's coming from another source. Meaning, as Rashi explains over here, it's not coming father to son. Father to son, that's Yerusha. There's nothing you could do to block that. However, if it's coming through some other avenue, marriage or some other means of Yerusha, so there, before it comes into your property, you can block. You could say no. Uched Rav Dama Rava HaOmer. And the Gemara says, and we're going to have to buttress this with the statement of Rava, which is, Yafshi B'Takanas Chachamim K'Gonzu Shoman Lo. Rava says that in this case, a husband, but as we'll see in just a moment, a wife also, they both, if they want to, can demur and refuse a takana that was instituted for their behalf. A financial takana that was made on behalf of them, they can, if they would like to, refuse. Not, well, actually, it's interesting. We're going to see there's going to be a subtle difference between the man and the woman in this regard. So, if kigonzu shomala, my kigonzu kiter rav huna marav, so amar rav huna marav, yechol isha shetamala bala, eni nizonas ve'eni osa. We know that the woman is going to get supported from the husband. She's going to get mizonas from the husband. On the other hand, quid pro quo in exchange as a reciprocity, so her earnings are going to go to her husband. Let's say the woman right now is doing, Baruch Hashem, she's doing great. She has a job, very, very lucrative job, she's doing great. And she says to the husband, you know what? You keep your mizonos, I'll keep my ma'asei yadayim. The only reason why my ma'asei yadayim are going to you is because of Takanas Chachamim. I would like to refuse that. because it's obviously more financially advantageous for me to keep my Masi Yadayim and you keep your Mizonos. And she can do that. So the Gemara is saying, likewise, the husband can do the same thing with Peros. The husband can say to the wife, you keep your Peros. And the Gemara Ksuva says, what was the exchange for Peros? I know this, right there, right. He's good. So the Gemara back in Ksuva, so it was in the end of the Memtes, I think. Anyway, the Gemara in the end of the Gemara Ksuva tells us that Pirkuna Tachas Peros, that the exchange was Pirkuna. So once again, you keep your Peros, I'll keep my get out of jail free card. That's which is basically what it is, and the Gemara says, and they could do that as well. So you can block takanas chachamim. So the Gemara says, so that's what happened before it sets in. Although this is where it gets a little bit tricky. The woman, this part's tricky. I'm glossing over it, but I'll whisper it under my breath. The woman can block her mizonos even after the marriage has started. But okay. I said it. Let's move on. So the so that's where the Gemara is saying that would be a scenario in which a husband could put a get in a property that's exclusively his wife. So it's complicated, but essentially, just to wrap it up, the Gemara is basically saying that in a scenario where during Erusin, where he's identified the woman, he's married more than that. He's married to her. It's just that her property hasn't become the shareholder in her property yet, because that's only happening at Nisuin. So before Nisuin actually kicks in, he writes, I do not want the peros of your property. You will retain the peros of your property. So now she has a property that is exclusively hers, and he is not a shareholder in that property. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, which admittedly is extraordinarily limited, under those circumstances, he then could take the get and put it in that property in order for it to be hers. That is answer number one, which admittedly is complicated and extraordinarily limited. The Gemara says, Rava Amar Ati Yadami Lokanyale Labaal. So Rava says, wait 1 second. And now he's going to go over what is a more fundamental approach. And that's the following. Rava says, first of all, does a woman own her hand? Now, in a moment, we're going to answer unequivocally, yes, she does. Of course she does. And it's even hard to understand what Rava is even suggesting at the front end of his point. But let's go through the Gemara. Doesn't the husband own the wife's hand? Meaning, how does it get work when he does it the way the Torah demands? By putting it in her hand. Her hand is his, right? And Rava says, and meanwhile it works. Why does it work? Because we have coincidental actions. Okay, not coincidence, but coincidental. Thank you. That's a better way to say it. We have a simultaneous occurrence of the fact that he gives her a get, and she acquires her own hand. Gita v'yada b'am ke'echad. So the Gemara says, Hachanami gita v'chatzir b'am ke'echad. Same thing over here. When he puts the get in her chatzir, so the chatzir now, and the get is hers, and the chatzir is hers, and they are simultaneous events. So Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi. Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi. Rava Yad Isha Kakashile. I don't understand Rava's thought process. Meaning, what are we talking about? Her hand? Very difficult to understand what Rava was even suggesting. The idea that the hand belongs to him. The chatzir, you could talk about him having a partial ownership in her chatzir, because he does, because the parents are his. But her hand, masi yadayim come off the hand, but not the hand itself. He doesn't own the hand. So amar le rava yada evika kashale. So Gemara concedes that point. Of course you're right. Meaning, Rava never entertained the idea, that the wife of his hand actually was owned by the husband. The Gemara says, I'll tell you what bothered Rava, Evet Kanani. There, like we've discussed throughout the entire fourth parak of Gittin, that is ownership. And when a man owns an Eved Kenani, he owns the goof Eved Kenani. So the Kakasha Lelaman, Damer Bishtayi De Atmo, Yad Eved Kiyad Rabba Damya, Ela Gita Vyada Baim Kechad, Achanami Gita Vachatir Baim Kechad. So the Gemara says that's exactly what was bothering Rava, and the solution that he gave, which would have application to our scenario over here. What bothered Rava was, how is an Eved going to acquire the get? Get meaning get shichrur. He's going to get the get in his hand, but his hand belongs to the owner. How does that work? Answer is and must be gita v'yada b'im ke'echad. It's simultaneous. Rav is now saying the same thing is true over here. When the husband puts the get of his wife in her chatzir, we're going to employ now the same lumdus of gita v'chatziro b'im ke'echad. Okay, Adkan, let's quickly wrap it up. Let's summarize and we'll continue tomorrow with the story. So today we discussed the end of the seventh parak of the Masech, of Masech's Gittin. We talked about Tanayim, more scenarios within Tanayim. If the husband has a hakpada, that the get should only be written after 12 months, so there has to be compliance with that hakpada. We talked about different formulations of the husband in which Rav Yossi and the Tana Kama disagree. Okay, we talked about what the different definitions of achar is, when he says, I want it to be done after the Shemitah cycle, after the year, after the month, after the week. Okay, that ended the seventh parak. We started the eighth parak. The eighth parak told us that even though the Torah says v'nelsim yada, we have a larger definition, a wider definition of what hand means. Hand means the property. And what we've been dealing with since the beginning of the eighth parak is if he puts it in her chatzer, doesn't he have a share in that property? And that property is not exclusively hers. How does it work? The complex answer of the Gemara is that he withdraws himself from that property before the nisuin begins. That's a complex answer and it's very limited. The Rava answer, the Rava approach is that Kito v'yado b'im ke'echad, Kito v'chatzero b'im ke'echad.